It's the Wolftones, Christy Moore, the Pogues and Status Quo. And tomorrow, at the same venue, Subterraneans will open around 5 o'clock, then the Dubliners, then UB40, and then U2. So, we had the U2 crew all from Cork in here earlier on. So, we did a lot of interviews with this band this year, U2, that is. So, let's just say that there were some revealing moments.
This is quite strange, actually, because if this was on television, this would be quite amazing. The only person without his top off at the moment is The Edge. Everybody else has their clothes off in the studio in terms of trousers. And in fact, Edge has nothing on from the waist down.
I'm not too. So, what about Dave Banning there? I noticed you're wearing a pretty psychedelic pair of undies yourself.
All right, this is getting ridiculous. Wait a minute now. We're going to get somebody on the phone, but before we do, Bono, tell us a joke, will you?
What joke?
The one you just told us.
That is a dirty joke.
Ah, it's not that dirty. Go on, give us it again.
I tell you, it's Gavin told me on the way here.
Go on, blame Gavin, come on.
Well, it was Bernie and a tract, actually. Bernie and tract who were, in fact, they were on their summer holidays, as you know. And anyway, they wanted, I think it was Bernie wanted to bring home a dog, you know, a pet dog, anyway. So she was bringing it back, you know. And she bought a skunk by mistake, you know? And as a result, Tractor says, you know, that's not a dog. You've got a little puppy. That's, in fact, a skunk. She saw it be caught at the Irish Customs. She says, I better hide it. She says, where do I hide it? She says, I put it in my knickers. So Bernie says, geez, that's an awful smell. She says, if it dies, it dies. Now, that is a bit dirty for the air.
That's disgusting.
This is why we're not on the air, actually.
Yeah, all right, let's see, it's now 25 to 9.
Are we on the air?
Oh yeah, this is about time he took a phone call, I think. There's been a guy waiting on the phone for ages.
Are we on the air?
His name is Fergal O'Neill, and it's he's going to ring in. Hello, Fergal, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good man yourself. Speak up a bit louder and Bob's your uncle. Okay, fire away.
Okay, I wanted to ask the lads, were they a bit really anxious starting off again for the New World Tour, and why did they pick Tampa, Arizona to start off?
Have you got your clothes on?
Edge is asking if you have your clothes on, Fergal.
Yeah, I have, actually. This isn't
hip.
I know.
Oh, good man. Take them off.
Take them off before we answer there.
Well, anyway, go on, Edge.
What was the question again?
What was it like starting off in Arizona? Why did you pick Arizona? Were you apprehensive starting off the world tour?
Haven't you got an easier one there, Fergal?
Where'd you get the hat?
Ask me one on sport.
Where'd you get the hat, he said?
The hat? Where did I get the hat? I stole it from Bono, is the answer.
Larry, who were you buying the flowers for on Tuesday?
Lawrence, buying flowers on Tuesday.
I was buying it for the girl who does our wardrobe. Her name is Marion, and she's just had a little whippersnapper, and I was just going into the hospital to buy them.
Lucy Bloom Webb's.
Yeah, we should play the next song for Lucy Bloom.
And so that's what I was doing, getting flowers in the hospital.
Okay, listen, Fergal, thanks for ringing in. We better take a few more. There's about 1,000 phone calls lined up, it seems, at the moment. So thanks for ringing in.
Of course, when Larry Cork's out of here, Bob, we make headlines.
Ronan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Good man.
Hi,
yourself.
Ronan.
We can hear you loud and clear. Fire away.
What's the most your favourite U2 song you've ever performed on stage?
The Lost Highway is our favourite U2 song.
Give us a few verses there, Edge.
I'm a rolling stone, all alone and lost. For a life of sin, I've paid the cost. When I pass by, all the people say, just another guy on the lost highway. I was just a lad, barely 22, neither good nor bad, just a lad like you. But now I'm lost, too late to pray. I started down
that lost highway.
Yay! Yay! Oh, of course, there's a serious side to you two as well. Bono talked about Mothers of the Disappeared on the Interview album.
I wrote Mothers of the Disappeared, the words to Mothers of the Disappeared, with the experience that I'd had in Salvador in the back of my mind. And there is a group of women in Argentina who are known as the Mothers of the Disappeared, but there's also a group of women in Salvador who are known as the Mothers of the Disappeared. They were set up by Archbishop Romero before he was gunned down while saying Mass in San Salvador. And those women are an organization of women who have lost their family to the death squads in Salvador. Death squads, I must say, that are backed by America. And, or should I say, backed by the Ronald Reagan regime. They were not backed by the Jimmy Carter regime. These women sat in a room and told their story to me. The stories of their sons and their daughters arriving home, their heads in shoeboxes. They showed me photographs of their daughters raped and butchered. And I had to stop. Such was my disgust and what was presented to me that I had to stop a few times from looking at these photographs. In fact, the same book of photographs is seen in Oliver Stone's film Salvador, if you see it. And the sort of rage and the anger I felt about it resulted in, quite interestingly, a very moody and atmospheric song, which is Mothers of the Disappeared.
Well, that's from the U2 Talkie, the official Joshua Tree Interview album, and of course it's from the Joshua Tree album itself, that track. That was Bono talking before that. And of course, Reagan's America, and indeed America without Ronald Reagan, came up in the Croke Park interview.
I must tell you a story about the Mothers of the Disappeared, which is the last track on the Joshua Tree. And so I wrote the song based on my experiences with the day I spent with the Madres, they're called. They were set up by Archbishop Romero. Archbishop Romero was a fairly right-wing guy, member of the Catholic Church, who was brought into Salvador to sort of, you know, quell the masses and stop them asking, you know, uncomfortable political questions. But when he saw the poverty and when he saw the injustice of the state of Salvador, he complained and gave out. And eventually he was gunned down while giving Mass in Salvador. They just walked in and they shot him down. But before he died, he set up the Madres, which is the Mothers of the Disappeared. And I spent a day with them. You see them if you go to see the Oliver Stone's film Salvador.
Yeah, it's in that.
You see all about them. Well, I just had a call about a few days ago, it was about last week or so, just to tell me that those very people had, in fact, have been... they planted a bomb in the toilets of the building and they blew that building up. And there's nothing about it in any of the papers. There's nothing about it in the West. And there is this conspiracy of silence, and you know, that is the reality of American mm-hmm. foreign policy. That's separate from Americans. We're talking about one administration under Ronald Reagan, and I, and that is something that you start to see when you go to America first. I'm taken up with it and excited by it, and I love it, and I love to be there. But you start you dig further, scrape beneath the surface, and you see that a lot of the prosperity depends upon, you know, other countries and what's going on in those other countries.
Yeah. Like, America is the best and the worst all rolled into one. When I think of America, I don't think of Ronald Reagan. I think of John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Abraham Lincoln, people like that. I mean, the idea behind that country originally was incredibly positive and very open, very liberal. What's happened to America is the tragedy. But, I mean, that can be reversed. That's the thing about America. People are incredibly positive in their thinking, and there's no reason why things shouldn't change. Mm-hmm. The reason that things are the way they are is lack of information. People just don't know what's going on there.
There is something preposterous, I must say, about me standing, sitting here completely naked with, in fact, my knickers on my head, talking about Ronald Reagan's American foreign policy. I just like to just say
that. The only way that you can talk about Ronald Reagan's American foreign policy.
That's 11 o'clock TikTok, that's from the live album Under a Blood Red Sky. We're not finished yet with pieces of interviews we did this year, because actually when I was talking to the crew earlier on, I said we did an interview on Larry's birthday. I got mixed up, it was my birthday, but Larry was in anyway, and we'll have a little bit from that one in a few minutes time, but I want to play this one here. I'm going to play this for Rachel Kelleher, who rang in from Richmond Hill, and who was at the Lark last week as well, and her message is don't forget the boxer shorts, but I haven't a clue who that message is meant to be for. Here's Jimmy Cliff. That's a guy called Joe Crow. Compulsion is the name of the song. That's on Cherry Red Records. Before that, you heard Sitting in Limbo, and that was from Jimmy Cliff, the man who wrote it as well. Okay, the preview of the Joshua Tree album was pretty special, because Larry Mullen came in with the album and came in to talk, and he's a reluctant interviewee normally, but once you get him going, especially about his hometown, how Dubliners react to you too, now they're public property.
Yeah, it is a bit easier. In fact, the only problem is from foreigners coming over. A lot of people travel over to, like, take pictures of your house. However, I find Irish people are very, you know, they're casual, blasé about it. I don't get that much hassle. If I go into town, people will come up and, you know, either ask for your autograph or want to shake your hand, and that's cool, you know, that's great.
Yeah, in fact, that's funny to say, because a lot of foreigners do come over and want to know what you do. Like, I think they go for every connection, and they come in here.
Yeah. No, it's all right at first, but it gets on your nerves. Like, there were two Italian women came over, and walked up to my house and walked up to my door, and like they were old, they're like in the 30s, and they were, you know, they're teachers and they worked in some college, and they felt that they had the right to walk into my house and that I should be available to talk to them, you know, like there and then. And like it was very hard to just say to them, look, no, I'm sorry, this is my home, it's private. Yeah. And you can't come in here. If you want information, I'm not saying you can't have it. I'm saying you've got to do it in another way. If you write a letter, your questions will be answered.
Mm.
You know? And you know, sometimes people want a PC, you know?
Yeah, because Morrissey was with us from the Smiths on the programme just a few weeks ago, and himself and Johnny Marr have moved down from Manchester now, down to London, because, I mean, he even said at one stage, like, if you're walking on the street and somebody might want to give you a bop on the head, you know?
Yeah.
So, you would never think of leaving Dublin, though, on that level?
No, I mean, and I suppose some people sort of might think at this age it's a bit of a cliche, you know, you two, Dublin, you know, like it's great for them, you know, they, you know, it's very easy, you know, to sort of say, oh, it's great to live here. But I mean, they are the facts. I mean, we don't have to live here. We could live other places and not have to pay the same amount of tax or whatever. We could, you know, just go away and live in New York.
Mm.
Well, it's the same sort of attitude as there is in Dublin. People just don't take that much notice. They're just not really that interested, you know?
Well, do you think that people within the business and on the periphery, etc., do take notice of the fact that previous Irish rock stars have always said they were going to do things for Dublin and put money back in and help bands and all the rest of it and that, which they never really got around to doing because they were too busy doing other things. Whereas you two, in quite a quiet way, but in an incredibly effective way, have done loads of things on that level. I'm not just talking about Mother Records.
Sure.
But loads of things on that level. Are you aware of the appreciation, like, right across the board from the industry, from everybody involved in music, from people who hire out gear to people who fix jack plugs on stage?
Yeah, there seems to be sort of I think people appreciate it, but I mean, that's not why we do it. We're not looking for that. It's just, like, we grew up here, and when we were playing in the Dandelion Market and all that, there wasn't really anybody prepared to put their money where their mouth is, as you said.
Mm.
We sort of said, well, let's be different, let's do it, you know, let's actually put our money where their mouth is, and that's why we can live here. If we weren't like that, if we didn't, you know, care about this, like I say, if we didn't care about this country and actually do things, you know, I think people would just say, look, just, you know, why don't you just piss off?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It would be impossible to come on the radio and say, I love Dublin. Say, if you love Dublin so much, why don't you do something for it?
All right, there it is, Under a Blood Red Sky. That was Gloria. So thanks to Joe O'Hurley, Sammy O'Sullivan, Steve Iredale, Tom O'Lally and Timmy Buckley as well for dropping in earlier on in the programme. I didn't read out any weather forecasts actually earlier tonight, but looking at it now, it's looking good for Cork over the weekend. It's going to be fine.